This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Still breezy for tomorrow. Again, clear sailing with a high near 78, and tomorrow night, clear starry skies with a low around 48 and not much in the way of a breeze. Our alternative forecast for today, it's a last quarter root moon in Capricorn. The synodic forecast, they say it's not a good time to be sowing anything in the garden. Ah, you see that? It's a waning moon. So instead, use the time to weed and harvest from the garden. It's a good time to start a compost heap, new one, little one, close to where you're going to be using it. A biodynamic outlook moon in Capricorn, it's an earth sign, so go for those root plants. The sidereal side of the garden has this, the moon in Capricorn, that suggests potatoes and tubers planted will have strong growth. And that's it for both the alternative and our traditional forecasts. Now we're going to, before we get into some of the local issues, this is May Day 2013, and it may very well, when we look back, be one of those pivotal moments. Russell Mulcahy is the editor of Corporate Crime Reporter. Many listeners are probably very familiar with this. It's organizing the Corporate Crime Reporter is organizing a conference. Russell just wrote the piece, "The Failure to Prosecute Corporate Crime Undermines U.S. Justice," for Reuters. Before we speak with Russell, welcome to the KBU Airwaves. Imagine you are driving down the highway at 90 miles per hour where the posted speed limit is 55. As a result of your speeding, you lose control of your vehicle. You cause a wreck that kills people. Here's a sure bet. You'll be convicted of a crime. You will admit wrongdoing. You'll be punished. Corporate crime goes unpunished. And I believe, and I'm going to ask Russell about this, that there's a very good reason, and it's certainly no accident. Good morning, Russell. I am delighted to welcome you to the KBOO Airwaves on May Day 2013. Thanks so much for being with us.
Good morning, Chris. Good to be here.
Well, we recently had Catherine Austin Fitz of the Solari Report on the show, and she spoke about the corporatization, in other words, the transfer of the powers of the government to corporate entities, lock, stock, and two smoking barrels. And it seems that this we have a crime wave going on. We really do. We have a corporate crime wave taking place right now. And it's not, the forces seem so powerful that nothing whatsoever is done to cloak or dissemble in any way some of these actions. Can you briefly outline how we have allowed this to happen?
Are you there?
Yes. Hello?
Okay, good. So how have we allowed this to happen?
Well, yeah.
It's been an insidious step-by-step process, and which we've been watching for the last 25 years in writing Corporate Crime Reporter every week. We're holding this conference on Friday at the National Press Club, where we have top Obama, the two, three top Justice Department enforcement officials, the top SEC enforcement official, and we're going to put it to them that we have a double standard of justice in this country. If you and I engage in even the most minor criminal wrongdoing, we're going to jail. The major corporations engage in reckless, serious harm that inflicts far more damage on society than all street crime combined. But they get off with these slaps on the wrist, and it doesn't have to be that way. It's like the government's in a really bad habit of handing out these slap on the wrist consent decrees and deferred non-prosecution agreements like candy. The reason it's happening is because I believe a big reason is the revolving door. So you have these young attorneys coming out of school going to work for the government, not to do good for the government, although that sometimes they do, but primarily as a staging ground to go through the revolving door and collect the big cash defending the corporate criminals. So, for example, most recently we saw Lanny Brewer, the head of the criminal division, and while he was there, you know, he made a number of decisions not to criminally prosecute the big banks for their recklessness and fraud that led to the 2008 financial disaster. And he was the subject of two major television investigative reports, one on PBS called The Untouchables and the other on 60 Minutes called Prosecuting Wall Street. And so he decided recently that he was going to go back to the corporate law firm Covington & Burling and collect his $4 million a year defending the corporate criminals that he was supposed to be prosecuting. So I think that is primarily the reason we have this insidious system where that you're basically auditioning for a job and to defend private corporations while you're supposed to be criminally prosecuting them and deterring this kind of wrongdoing. Now, what the reason I read that Reuters article that way was I live in West Virginia, even though I work in D.C., and I don't commute every day. Obviously, I work, do a lot of work from home. But one of the things I used to tell my kids was about before they got their driver's license was, you know, you, even though you don't intend to hurt someone, the vehicle is a weapon. And if you, you know, drink and drive or engage in reckless driving and hurt someone, you're going to jail. And rightfully so. At the same time, we have this company in our state, Massey Energy, that engaged in reckless operation of its facility, the Upper Big Branch mine, where it had two sets of books, one for the regulators where it said everything was fine and one for the internal people showing the violations. It engaged in this kind of reckless disregard for the law and for the lives of the workers, and as a result, there was this explosion in 2010, and 29 workers were killed. Now, justifiably, federal investigators opened a criminal investigation. But what was the result? The result was one of these non-prosecution agreements. Outrageously, the Justice Department, Eric Holder, Obama, and their minions, their corporate minions, said, we're not going to criminally prosecute this company. We're just going to, you know, do a slap with this non-prosecution agreement. So that's the most outrageous example to me, because it's like we tell our kids one thing, and then they look up in a system that they're told upholds equal justice under law, and there it is. The double standard in stark display for all to see, and apparently no shame about it. Apparently, you know, they can get away with this. Well, the purpose of this conference is to send the message that we don't want the Justice Department, the SEC, to get away with it anymore. They're in this bad habit of handing out these slap on the wrist consent decrees. It's undermining the justice system, and they're doing severe damage to our democracy by sending a message to the whole society, especially our young children, that if you're politically powerful, if you're politically connected, if you can afford the big law firms, then you're going to get off. And because I'll tell you one thing, you can look at, I don't need to know the size of a company or its political power. I just need to know a couple things. What's its law firm? Where is it based? And I can tell you almost, I can predict these things almost to a T. Like, if it's a small company with a unknown law firm, the owner of the company or the company itself is going to be criminally prosecuted and the executives are going to jail. If it's a foreign company, even if it's a big company, the odds are much greater that it will be criminally prosecuted. But if it's a domestic U.S. major American multinational with one of these big 50 corporate law firms defending it, where the lawyers have been in and out of the Justice Department and the SEC,
Russell,
going to get one of these special deals.
Russell, I want to ask you, we're rapidly running out of time. I want to mention, too, that, of course, that we and Guantanamo Bay, pretty much virtually all of the 100-plus prisoners are on hunger strikes, and it's spreading. Virtually all of these people should be either released or housed in a very different facility and have their day in court. And that ties into everything that we have been speaking about here. I wanted to ask you about corporate, if these corporations, you know, of course, it's Citizens United, which granted them corporate personhood, then they ought to be subjected to the same laws that you and I are. And I want to know about the conference that is being held. What can be done? What is being done to roll back the non-prosecution agreement? Because this seems like poison.
People don't even know about these things. And so the first thing we have to do is elevate it in the public discussion, and that's the point of the conference. We have 15 reporters who signed up to attend, including reporters from the Wall Street Journal, Bloomberg, you know, mainstream outlets, Bloomberg, Reuters, the New York Times. So there's a lot of interest in this because it's not, you know, it's not really a fringe issue. It's become a mainstream issue, the double standard of justice. And so this is the first conference that, you know, a lot of these corporate conferences are primarily just government and defense attorneys. But this is the first conference that mixes it all up. So we have the top law enforcement officials from the government. We have top white-collar and corporate crime defense attorneys from the big law firms. But we also have public interest activists and university professors who you haven't, you know, flown through the revolving door and have a different take. And their different take is my take, which is you should be ashamed of this. You should be ashamed of the Obama administration should be ashamed of this corporate Justice Department that it set up and the corporate SEC. And we're going to pressure them to give us answers about what the justification is for the double standard, because we don't think there is one. We think if you engage in criminal activity, you should do the time and pay the fine.
Thank you so much for that, Russell. I appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today. It could not be better timing. I'm so delighted to have you on the show on May Day 2013. There's a great many events going on. Russell, of course, Russell Mokiba is the editor of Corporate Crime Reporter. Stay tuned to this show, because we will be covering that conference with great interest and doing more stories on non-prosecution agreements. Wouldn't you and I like to have one, especially after the likely outcome of some of the May Day actions here and across the country? I think we all ought to have non-prosecution agreements. This has been Air Cascadia for Wednesday, May Day 2013. Kurt Lauer engineered the show today. Thank you, Kurt. Kathleen Stevenson, the KBOO-AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned.
Today on Flashpoint's mass industrial homicide at the garment factory in Bangladesh, where the death toll may soar to over 1,000. And we'll have our regular weekly report on Israeli-occupied Palestine with Nora Barrows Friedman and the electronic intifada.net. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. This is your daily investigative news magazine. My name is Dennis Bernstein. Well, we continue our drumbeat coverage of the Bangladesh disaster, human rights nightmare. Rescue teams in Bangladesh have given up hope of finding more survivors from the garment factory complex that collapsed. At least 400 dead, with many that are still unaccounted for. Death toll could rise. With no hope left of finding further survivors, heavy machinery has been brought in to clear the mass of concrete and debris from the site in the commercial suburb of Savir, about 30 kilometers, 20 miles from the capital of Dhaka. As anger continued over the country's worst industrial accident, the owner of the collapsed building was brought before a court in Dhaka on Monday, where lawyers and protesters chanted, "Hang him, hang him." Officials in Bangladesh have said the 8-story complex had been built on swampy ground without the correct permits, and more than 3,000 workers, most of them young women, entered the building in the morning on Wednesday last week despite warnings that it was structurally unsafe. Well, that story is a little bit misleading. Joining us to talk about this and to expand our discussion today is Napoleon Gomez. He's a leader in the international labor movement. Gomez is an Oxford-educated economist, a member of the executive committee of the Industry All Global Union, and the director, I'm not sure if this is true. Is it still true, sir? The director of the Mexican National Union of Mine, Metal, and Steelworkers?
I'm the president of the National Mine, Metal, and Steelworkers Union of Mexico.
Well, it is
an president of the national level. Yeah.
It is an honor to have you with us. And you're in Canada now. Well, how did you end up in Canada?
Well, this terrible tragedy that happened in Bangladesh, we have parallel cases all over the world. And in 2006, in Mexico, we had a case similar in which a coal mine had exploded on the 19th of February 2006, and 65 miners died. And the company, the owner of the mine, Grupo Mexico, after 5 days of trying to rescue our colleagues, they decided to shut down the mine and abandon our colleagues without knowing if they were dead or alive. And because of the terrible safety and health conditions that prevail in the mine, that we have been complaining in the union, and the company, Grupo Mexico, completely ignored, because they were supported and backed by the government, the conservative government at that time of Vicente Fox. So when that happened and they shut down the mine, I accused the company of industrial homicide, what you may call in North America corporate murder. And immediately they launched a huge smear campaign against myself, my family, my colleagues from the National Union. And then a terrible political persecution, threats, even death threats that we received through anonymous phone calls, emails. And then I decided, under the recommendation of my colleagues and the international, the United Steelworkers from United States and Canada, and leaders and many others, leaders from the international level.